thank you everyone for having me here, and thank you for being in attendance. My voice will kind of fluctuate a little bit. I caught some kind of a cold, which has affected my voice, but nothing else, so don't back away. Again, my name is Rick Morgan. I'm with National Industries for the Blind. And again, thank you for having me here. Our corporate office is actually, and we're switching mics. That one's a little lower. Is there any way to raise that up? I'm feeling like a rock star right now. So, no, that's a little too close. Okay, here we go. Anyway, is that better?
Yes.
Okay, so again, our corporate office, National, well, first let me see, with a raise of hands, how many of you have heard of National Industries for the Blind? Oh, wow. Oh, I'm done. Lost the mic. I've lost, hello. Well, can you hear me?
There you go.
Oh, now I can't yell. Probably, no, what's that?
Clap.
Oh, if you could clap if you've heard of National Industries for the Blind, that'd be better. And again, I'm done. No, no. So anyway, National Industries for the Blind is a central nonprofit agency that's actually based out of Virginia, Alexandria to be precise. And I'm part of a business development team that searches for new opportunities as well as to continue to push current items that are on a procurement list. I'm lucky in that I'm the only one that's actually out in San Diego. Everybody else is in Virginia. And I'm going to knock on wood that stays that way because leaving it. I got involved a little over a year and a half ago. I was director of business development for a couple of different companies that actually worked with the military and contracting. So I've been to a lot of the base installations and whatnot and talked to a lot of the contracting department personnel. But, you know, as we all do once in a while, you always keep an eye on what's fresh and what's out there. Found this opportunity that came up and started. I thought, you know, this means a lot. This is so much more. It meant so much more to me than just, well, quite honestly, lining the pockets of the people who own the companies that I worked for in the past. So I went through the gauntlet of interviews and whatnot, and here I am in front of you. So it's been a great year and a half. I'm just over that point. I love what I do, and that's because of people like you who are sitting in the audience. I will never complain about a job ever in my life again. So anyway, that's how I got into the industry. Again, we're a central nonprofit that's in Alexandria, Virginia, and basically we're dedicated to enhancing opportunities for people who are blind and enhancing the economic and personal independence of those people by creating, sustaining, and improving employment. And that's the mission, and we take it very seriously. That's our goal. So NIB operates under the Ability One program. Have you all heard of the Ability One program? Clap. I like this. I really am done. So anyway, the Ability One program was established in June of 1938 when President Roosevelt actually signed into law the Wagner O'Day Act. Did you hear about that? Okay. Man, this is great. So this was an effort, obviously, like most of you know, it was an effort for the president to create more employment for people who were blind by providing goods and services to the federal government. 2 months later, in August of 1938, NIB was actually formed and tasked with not only managing the program, but offer support to all the agencies that actually provide those goods and services to the federal government. So. Great. It's great for us, and again, we started in 1938. Now, in 1971, let me go here. The program is actually, it's morphed quite a bit in terms of its name. So it started out as the Wagner O'Day Act, but then in 1971, it was amended to encompass people with significant disabilities. So then we were known as Javits-Wagner O'Day Act. How many know that? And clap. All right, so JWAD is what it was known as. Now, I hated that. Yeah, that term's just too easy, whatever. But so it was amended, and then just most recently in 2007, it was changed to the Ability One program, which, you know, that was to actually better portray the mission and our identity in terms of that program. So hopefully that never changes again, because I'll have to change all my business cards, and so will a lot of other people. So since 1938, NIB and the Ability One program have made some major achievements and hit some major milestones, and I'm glad to say that the not only the program, but NIB will be celebrating next year's 75th anniversary, so that's fantastic. Well, thank you. So the Ability One program itself stands as the largest employer for people with who are blind and have severe disabilities, and there's about 40,000 Americans right now that are employed through the program. It's a great number, but it's not enough. Where's NIB? NIB stands at about 90 agencies or so that we have that are affiliated nonprofit agencies that work under the umbrella, like you said earlier, and they're spread out nationwide through about 35 states. We employed approximately 6,100 people, and in fiscal year 2011, we created approximately 537 new jobs, and we paid out over $100 million in wages and benefits. So that's a great number, but again, you'll hear me say, it's not enough. Now, our associated agencies produce about 3,500 different products that we supply to the federal government. And those products are known as Skillcraft products. Have you heard of that? Clap. Ah, yes. Fantastic. So these products, you know, they range from office materials to, and I'm just going to go down the list because I don't have the gift of memory. There's just so many. Cleaning supplies, hardware, paints, and a wide variety of equipment for the military, including uniforms, bedding, and protective equipment. We make the Army physical training uniform pants and jackets. The Air Force battle dress uniform, which is also known as the ABU, and the Navy fleece jacket. We also make all the inner spring mattresses for the entire naval fleet, so these are some good items. Now, we also provide through our affiliate agencies, we provide services to include, and this is one reason why we're here, we want to talk about services, and we have some agencies here to my side, both sides, who are much better speakers, by the way. And they'll talk a little bit about those services. But, you know, it ranges from contract management, which Kirk will touch on a little bit, supply chain management, contact centers, document management, administrative and technical technology services. I mean, it's just wide. And the reason for that is that the developments in assistive technology have really leveled that playing field for our community. And we're seeing more career growth in those areas. So it's a fantastic thing. Now, NIB used to only be known for its Skillcraft products, but now due to the advancements in assistive technology and our people's amazing work ethics and fantastic quality of work, we're literally being seen and recognized for the superior services our agencies offer to our customers. And I think the table to my right needs a bit of a clap and applause because they do a great job here in San Diego. Let me touch on just a few, and I don't want to steal the thunder of the speakers here, but let me just touch on a few services that NIB and the Ability One program actually provide or offer to the community out there. One is NIB's affiliate 508 Assurance Services Program, which provides, let me just go back a little bit, that actually just recently became a full-fledged official business line for us. So that's important. Section 508 is an amendment to the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, which mandates that all electronic, I'm going to read verbatim, electronic and information technology systems, including websites, which are developed, procured, maintained, or used by the federal government, must be accessible to people with disabilities. Now, our services provide conformance, usability testing, validation, remediation services where we'll actually implement the changes on the websites, portals and applications, including their electronic documents like PDF documents, Word, and legacy applications. So there are approximately 21 agencies that are in different stages of that program in developing their services. So we see this as a service that should continue to grow, quite honestly. And teleservices is another area of business that we see potential growth in as well. We have approximately 29 agencies that have expressed interest in this arena, and that number just keeps growing. Some of these contacts, and right now there's about 15 of those agencies that actually are are running full-fledged contact centers in at different levels. So that's a great achievement. Some of these contact centers are located in New York, Baltimore, Indianapolis, Mississippi, Texas, Atlanta, Washington, and hopefully soon here in Los Angeles. So we're looking forward to that. And we have approximately 200 to 300 seats that contact center representatives that are out there right now, and we're looking to grow that. So hopefully to 3,000, 4,000, that'd be great. Now these teleservices include switchboard operations, contact center handling inbound and outbound calls, help desk support, order processing, and of course customer care. So. We also offer, and again, I don't mean to steal a thunder, but I'll talk a little bit about it, the CMS program, which is a contract management support program, which is, you know, one is right here in San Diego. This is where we offer on and off-site solutions to our clients. We prepare ready-to-close contracts, and we do also perform de-obligations and much more. So again, I'll leave that to be covered a little bit later, but the team is doing great in San Diego, and they really are a focal point when I talk to customers, and they know what they're doing. So thank you to them. We have approximately 14 agencies that expressed interest in that arena as well, and we have about six that are fulfilling requirements with the DOD, the Department of Defense. So and we're hoping to see this business grow as we push for more customers in this area. So that's a good thing. The Ability One program also operates about over 140 Ability One base supply centers across the nation. Now, this includes all aspects of running a store, from ordering to stocking of the goods, point of sales, sometimes delivery when our customers need it, and, of course, customer care. And our primary, so I'm going to a couple of our primary targets here. Our primary targeted customers in the products and services that we offer are the federal government and the DOD, of course. And we're now moving more aggressively into the state, local, and commercial industries as well. We see this as necessary because, basically, you know, we are and we will continue to feel the after effects of decreased funding for the federal government and the Department of Defense. So we see this as an opportunity to be more diverse in a lot of different areas. It's very important. So we're looking to talk. We partner with small businesses. We partner with 8A, women-owned businesses. Anywhere we can, I'm trying to partner. So, bottom line is we definitely need to be much more diverse. NRB is not only focused on creating jobs, but developing careers through challenging, knowledge-based positions and high-energy quality work environments. And forgive me, I'm not an expert in this because we're going to have somebody here talk a little bit about that, so I'm going to look at my notes quite a bit. But one program that NIB offers is our Fellowship for Leadership Development. This is a salaried program that combines business-focused on the job experience with professional-developed activities. The goal of this program is to land professional managerial positions in the community and with the network of NIB-associated agencies as well. Fellows are selected on academic achievement, experience, references, and their interviews. And 12 fellows have actually completed the program since 2003. Yeah. And they've basically moved into managerial positions. It's fantastic. And I believe a new group just started this month. So if you have any questions about that, you can send an email to fellowship@nib.org. Again, that's fellowship@nib.org. And we also offer training, job placement, career opportunities, and guidance with transition to civilian life for veterans who are wounded with any type of injury, including blindness. In addition, there's an online employment resource available to people who are blind and seeking employment at NIB associations. This is a collaborative effort between NIB and AFB, which is the American Foundation for the Blind. Employment options include computer jobs, professional managerial positions, contact center operations, high-tech manufacturing, assembly, packaging, you name it, that list changes quite a bit. So that was just to mention a few, but you'll see different things come up on the site. You can go, and this is kind of long if you're going to write this down, and I'll say it as slow as I can, but I've had a lot of coffee. www.afb.org. Here it comes. / Career Connect. / Careers with Vision. There is. I was going to get to that. .asp. That's for those quick writers. And I tell you what, if that was way too much for you, which it probably was, I'll take your information here a little later. Just give me your contact information. I'll send you a link. I have CDs. I don't believe it's on the CD, no. But I can send you that link if you have an email address, okay? And I'll be right here afterwards to answer questions and then also get your information to hand out or send you those links as well. I'll also send you the link to the NIB site, which you can get onto the HR section on there as well. Now, I wanted to also point out that NIB has 5 agencies located here in California. And they are located in Fresno, Oakland, Santa Rosa, San Francisco, and Junior Blind of Los Angeles, who will speak a little bit today. In addition, we also have 2 agencies that are located in Arizona, which are in Phoenix and Tucson. We have agencies located in Utah, an agency in Utah, New Mexico, Oregon, and Nevada, one in each one of those states. And then we also have a great agency located in Seattle, Washington, which we have a representative here, Mr. Kirk Adams, the CEO, who will talk about his agency as well. And now, while NIB has accomplished a lot in the soon to be 75 years, we still have a ton of work to do because, again, we have 70% of working Asian Americans who are blind that are not employed. So we look forward to continuing the effort to increase employment throughout California as well as the rest of the nation. So, again, thank you. Hope I didn't talk too quickly. And I'm going to sit here and listen. So anyway, I'll be here to answer your questions later and take down your information if you need it. All right. Now I'm going to pass it over to Kush and Michael Martinez from Junior Blind of Los Angeles, and they're going to cover a couple things.
Sure.
I still feel like a rock star.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick, and good morning, everybody. Thank you to the chapter to invite us to speak over here, and appreciate the opportunity. I guess first I will introduce myself and tell you a little bit about my background. I am from the hotel and restaurant business. I have no idea about all the stuff that went on. But how circumstances in your life change. In 2004, I started to lose a good amount of vision. So after going from pillar to post, trying to find my way around, I accidentally came upon Junior Blind as an afterthought from my Department of Rehab counselor. Hey, why don't you go there? Maybe you might be able to do your things much faster than at the Braille Institute. That was the way the conversation went. And going there to learn how to rehab myself and get independence, I spent about 5 months at the wonderful Davidson program, which taught me a lot about things which I never knew or understood or never expected. After I finished that program, I started to volunteer and in the technology lab because that was usually where I ended up, because technology being a little bit of a thing to play with. And then I was asked or offered a job as a on a part-time basis in as a assistive technology instructor. And I did that for about a year, part-time, on-call. And a few months ago, Mike had a little conversation with me and said, okay, we are doing something with the business development. Maybe you can see what you can do over here. And we evolved into this program. The program is really wonderful, especially when I understood the whole details about it being able to employ blind and visually impaired people, give them a hope or chance to get a job. And that really inspired me to get this thing started and moving with it. When I started, it was a room which was empty. It had to be gutted out. And today, we have a wonderful call center set up, or should I call it the contact center, where we have a place for 7 agents and 1 supervisor to work. And we are really excited about that. And going with the vision of Junior Blind of America, which is touching more lives, I think this is the perfect way where we are going to start. We are planning to get this started, or it's already there and ready to go. We are ready to employ people and get started. We are also working on expanding the business development in other directions, where Mike will be able to give you a little more information. And with that, I would like to pass this down to Michael Martinez. And it, at the end, if you guys have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you, Kush. Michael Martinez, Director of Rehabilitation and Employment Services at Junior Blind. So I oversee all of our adult services, and just about 2 years ago was tasked with figuring out what business development was, what NIB was, and how do we make use of it. So we're still in the stages of figuring out, you know, how do we connect the dots on everything. But what we latched on to immediately was the services aspect. We wanted to go with strength that we have at Junior Blind, and we think that that strength is assistive technology and the people that go through our programs, more in the administrative skills portion. And obviously, Kirk in Seattle, they're the model for what an NIB and a business development agency can do, because they have such a diversified set of employment opportunities at Seattle Lighthouse. Not just in Seattle, obviously, but even in San Diego, and maybe a few other places as well, which Kirk will talk about. We've got to start somewhere. We've got to have one employment opportunity to start with here at Junior Blind. And we settled on contact center, not because I'm, you know, sort of crazy about contact centers. I've become crazy about them, because the way you run a successful business in contact center is by hiring quality employees. And the more quality employees you have, the better. The more you have, the more profits you are taking in. It's the one of these businesses where downsizing does not help. It's the opposite. You've got to upsize. You've got to hire more people. And that's why we like it, because we want to get a base going. We're working closely with Department of Rehab, and Joe, I saw you over there, and some of your folks, some of your supervisors, Joe Xavier over there to the left, to put together a plan so that we can also do some training and some placement, because we've talked to over 150 potential businesses out there while we were setting up contact center, and over half of them have been really, really interested in what we're doing. They couldn't figure out how to connect the dots on it as well, but we've already got potential to have 2 private contact center partners that want to give us seeds, help us to get off the ground, and are interested in hiring the folks that we can produce either through our contact center or through our training and placement, which is something that's still in process. And what we'd like to do, and I want to give a special shout out to Bob Johnson from Seattle, who's their business developer, who's been going all over the place for many years developing business. And he came to us and he said, hey, how do we get together on this? How do we make a partnership work? And the idea that a rising tide rises all boats. I think that's how it goes. I think there was too many rises in there. But something about the tide rising the boats. Basically, if we work together, we can be more successful. Something, a statistic that Bob always throws out there, and I don't know if it's the numbers are exactly accurate, but you'll get the idea. NIB nationally is employing 6,000 people, or agencies that are associated with NIB employ 6,000 people. We have 6,000 potential workers in California alone. So we could double what NIB does just if we get something going in California. So that's what our hope, our end goal is, but we first got to start off with that first job. And we've got a business development team that's working really hard on that. And what we'd like to do in addition to doing contact center is to find ways to develop an employee pipeline, because there may be opportunities that come up in California, but do we have the workers? Do we have the trained workers? Are they ready to work? And that's what we want to help out in as well. We've been doing education for 40 plus years, adult education, so we want to connect the dots on that all the way through. We do great pre-vocational, now we want to look at doing vocational services as well. And in tandem with doing the education piece, we're going to have jobs. So we're accepting applications as of, yesterday, to get folks involved. Really quickly about our contact center, the great thing about it is we're working on a flexible platform, cloud-based contact center software platform that has connected us with these potential private partners. And what they do, what we like about what they do is their whole business is remote agents. Their whole business is at-home or off-site agents. We will have a contact center at Junior Blind. We will have roughly be able to have 7 to 14 employees working out of that contact center. But eventually, as we grow, we hope to be hiring folks that can work from home and still, provide the same service that they would come into Junior Blind, minus the 4-hour daily commute. So if those of you that are from Los Angeles or even anywhere in Southern California, you know how spread out everything is. You know that the homes and apartments and rent is cheaper the further out you get. So, we've got some folks, our great assistive technology team at all of our adult services, coming 2.5 hours each way on access just to go to work. So what I always tell our other employees is you may work for 8 hours. These guys are working for 12 every day, So we want to find ways to make employment enticing, because we also know there's another problem, which is folks are scared to work sometimes because they're afraid they're going to lose their benefits. And we want to make working easy, or getting into a job easy. And then there's folks like Kush, who may have lost their vision later in life. Well, he doesn't probably want to go back and get a master's and a PhD and all this stuff in another career field. So we wanted to start with something that's entry level with room for growth, and contact center fits that bill perfectly. And that's something that we talked with Department of Rehab about as well, because they were sort of worried that, hey, does this mean I got to authorize another 4 years of education? No. We're going to get you started. You're going to build your work experience. And this is a job that somebody can do while they're in school. They can work with us part-time. They can do it for 5-6 hours a day, and they can still manage their studies, particularly if they're taking them online. So that's where we're at now. Contact centers is where we're starting, but we hope to grow and expand and diversify, just as Seattle has done. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kirk Adams. And we'll be available for question and answer. We have a booth downstairs.
All right, Jacqueline, how much time do I have? Okay. I hope to be fairly brief so we can have questions, because I have a lot of things I can cover, but I want to address what people in the room are interested in, so I'm glad we'll have some Q&A. So again, my name is Kirk Adams. I have been blind since I was 5 years old when my retina is detached. I went to Oregon State School for the Blind in first grade, learned how to read and write Braille, learned how to use the Slate and Stylus and the Perkins, and learned how to type on a typewriter and use my white cane. So Then I started public school in fourth grade and went on through. I was always the only blind student from fourth grade on. But I've been involved in the nonprofit sector for about 20 years in various types of organizations, and came to the Lighthouse for the Blind about 12 years ago. The Lighthouse is a nonprofit social enterprise. We have 240 blind employees in all types of different jobs. We're the largest employer of people who are deafblind in the United States. We have 42 deafblind employees. So this session is about Ability One, and Ability One is an employment program designed to create jobs for people who are blind and have other severe disabilities. And the way it works, just really simply, is if we can identify a product or a service that the federal government or the military buys, and if we can show that we can deliver that product or that service, we can meet all the requirements, all the specifications, we can do it at a fair price, we can meet all the delivery, and we can do it with 75% or more of the labor going into the product or service being done by people who are blind, then we can have that contract set aside for us. So our organization has traditionally been a manufacturer. So just as an example, we were able to show the Army that we can make all the 1 and 2 quart canteens that are issued to all the soldiers. So we do that. We were able to show the Army that we could make their entrenching tool, which is a collapsible shovel, and meet all the specs and the fair market price, and do it with, we have 85% of the folks making that equipment are blind. So that's the tool we have in our toolbox under Ability One, is to identify those opportunities with the federal government and the military. I met Mr. Xavier last year in the fall at Enchanted Hills Camp when San Francisco Lighthouse did an employment seminar for a week, and we had some discussions since then, so I know that there are thousands of blind Californians seeking employment. There is really I don't even know if it's a drop in a bucket. There's a drop in an ocean here in this state as far as blind people working under Ability One. There is a lot of government and military activity in this state, so there are lots of opportunities for agencies like Junior Blind, San Francisco Lighthouse, and Lighthouse for the Blind, headquartered in Seattle, to create these jobs. What we've done so far is we do run base supply center operations. We have a base supply center that serves part of the Navy base here in San Diego, located at Point Loma. It's very small. We had meetings with the Navy yesterday about expanding that and growing that over time into something very significant that would supply the entire Navy activity here in San Diego, and we hope to make that happen over time. We have our contract management services office, and I see Michael Eden is on the program for noon, so I'll not talk a lot about that, so he can fill you in on that. We do have a task order to start a second contract closeout office here in San Diego. It's for a different customer. It's for the Defense Contract Management Agency. I think we're going to start that up right after the first of the year. Melanie Wimmenauer's in the room. She's responsible for that program. So if you want more information about where that stands, you can talk to her. We have a base supply center at China Lake Navy base here in the state. We just completed a contract to build a base supply center at Fort Irwin, which is near Barstow. And we need to hire blind people to work in these locations. So blind people in Barstow, we need to know who you are. Yeah, it's by Ridgecrest, I guess, is the town. So we will continue to look for opportunities in the state. We are a very sophisticated manufacturer, so we're not going to ignore the possibility of doing manufacturing here. I was talking to Lillian before the meeting and just commented to her that we do a lot of work for Boeing and we ship parts down to Long Beach. We just became a qualified supplier for Northrop Grumman in El Segundo, so we'll be making parts for them. So anytime you fly in a Boeing airplane, just be proud that there are 2,000 parts in that plane made by blind machinists in our machine shop. So I've been an unemployed blind person. I've been the guy who walks in with the cane and sits across the desk and can tell after 5 minutes I'm not going to get the job. I've had those experiences, and you know, obviously we don't want work in the Ability One program to be the only option for blind people, but we want it to be a good option, and we want to create a lot of different types of jobs. We need entry-level jobs. I tell parents of blind kids all the time, I say, you know, everyone needs their first crappy job, right? Everyone needs their, and we want to provide those type of entry-level jobs for people that don't have a lot of experience. We want to provide professional technical managerial jobs for blind professionals. We want to create career paths so people can, through work experience, discover what they want to do and to pursue that. So there's a lot of training involved. We do hire people with lots of gaps in not only their formal education, but in their blindness skills training. So we really seek to provide computer training. I'm a huge zealot around Braille. I think blind people need to read Braille. So we teach Braille to our employees in Seattle. Technology is so crucial to our success and to be competitive and to be able to deliver things at the prices customers need. We need to use technology. Our machining centers are all computer numerically controlled, Windows-based with JAWS and ZoomText, so blind people can set up the jobs and run the programs, do their first part checks, all that stuff. Contact center work, base supply center work, contract management, it all involves technology, so we need to use it to its fullest. I've got a Braille Sense on hand here on the desk with my iPhone sitting on top of it. I got a slate and stylus in my briefcase, so you know, you gotta have all the tools, you gotta use all the tools, and we're really excited about technology. There are jobs that people can do now that, you know, weren't very accessible not that many years ago. So we really feel that unless the job requires driving a vehicle, we can make it accessible. And you know, with that, I'm just really excited to be here. We really want to be part of the community. I've been looking forward to joining you at convention. I've gone to ACB nationally. I met Mitch Pomerantz, I think for the first time in Louisville. Some years ago, and we've had a nice dialogue over the years, and we're excited to be here. We'll be here in the state, both in the Bay Area and San Diego, Los Angeles primarily, and I have my business cards in my pocket, but my phone number is 206-436-2110. That rings up my desk, so 206-436-2110. I'm on the Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn, email me, send me a friend request, call me, give me your thoughts and ideas. And with that, I will end, and if we could do questions, that would be great.
I got a question over here.
Yeah, and who's speaking? Yeah.
And some of these places are not paying minimum wage. Does that change?
There are two agencies that have some blind people with profound developmental disabilities that are in supported employment that are paid commensurate wage under 14C. We pay everyone at least our state minimum wage, which in Washington State is $9.79 and going to $10.04. So that's really, we start people entry level about 50 cents above that. So in the tens, just for an entry level job for someone who doesn't have work experience. So no, our agency does not do that. There are two agencies that do, and there are no agencies that base that on blindness as the only disability. It involves folks who are blind and also have profound developmental disabilities. But all of the work we're talking about, like contract management, is under the Federal Service Contract Act. So that's prevailing wage for the community, determined by the federal government. And who's speaking?
This is Joe Xavier. Hi. Somebody said you were being recorded. So do you guys need mics or not? No, I guess not. Okay.
We don't have a portable mic.
That's fine. So, first of all, a couple of comments. You know, for you guys, I mean, anything that we can do to bend it and move that needle on employment, you know, congratulations, because that's one thing that we all know, is the employment of the blind and visually impaired is stuck on that 70%. So anything that can move that is a good thing. And of course, you know, having work experience for a lot of people, even as you described, Kurt, if it's a start, it gives that person that work experience, so then they have the ability to put that on the resumes and move on, you know, the more the merrier. There's a couple of things that I would just mention, and I don't really know how this might tie in, but we ran into something here in California that you mentioned ability one caught my attention, and I think it's something that will occur in the future. The Department of Defense, when they issue contracts for food services, you have that whole tug of war between the Randolph Shepherd Act and ability one. One of the things that we experienced a couple of years ago in a rather extensive DOD contract is that it had to have an ability one component. Mm-hmm. Even if they were not the ones that were receiving the contract. Mm-hmm. So if I translate that means that a vendor who chooses to, who works to provide a proposal, has to engage with an ability one provider mm-hmm. to satisfy that requirement. Mm-hmm. How that might tie into an ID, don't know, but that opportunity could be there. And then the other thing is more of a question. When you guys mentioned the contact centers and the various other programs, these are not independent contractors. These are all, somebody is an employer of record?
Yes.
And is that employer of record always in California?
At Junior Blind, they will be in California working at our center, or they will be working remotely, and they'll be with the Junior Blind. So they'll be that in our employee. The centers that we do work with, though, private ones, they do have work where you're your own business, and that's their model. Some of them do have that, but there are various types of models of the contacts that we've made where we would potentially help to do placement in these other centers, which would be national.
Yeah, and the reason why I raise that question, because the issue has come up in some cases where you have to have, if the workforce is in California, having that employer of record, Workers' Comp, and a few other legal laws, you know, not that California has any heavy statutory scheme. So I'd be just curious how that might be handled. And it's just more, you know, common question. We always might think of the time getting to that nitty-gritty, but it just popped into my mind as you guys were presenting.
Yeah, and a comment. The Department of Defense is the largest customer for Ability One. About 60% of the jobs are directly related to defense. So they have, as you mentioned, begun including Ability One requirements in their solicitations. So if a prime defense contractor is responding, many times now the requirement will be that they engage Ability One employees as subcontracts. So they could, for instance, subcontract with the Lighthouse or subcontract with Junior Blind to meet that requirement. As far as our employees, the folks sitting at the table here are employees of the Lighthouse for the Blind, Inc., headquartered in Seattle, Washington, but we obviously are licensed to do business in California and comply with the several regulations that exist in the state. And, you know, we're really willing to be very creative, and we can place people with other employers. We had not a blind person, but a service-disabled veteran in our CMS office just was hired by the Navy and is becoming a Navy employee on November 8th, and we're ecstatic. So, you know, we really like to partner and collaborate and figure out ways to get blind people employed. And if they're our employee, if they end up being someone else's employee, you know, it's all good.
Kirk, Mitch Pomeranz?
Yes.
A couple of comments. Far be it for me to speak for my wife. However, I think CCB stands ready to work with both the Lighthouse and JBA to funnel possible employment candidates to you. I recall 3-4 years ago spending a fair amount of time nagging Kevin Lynch and saying, Kevin, we need programs here in California, and I'm glad to hear that you now have 5 of those. I suspect, Michael, that a lot of our CCB chapters, maybe those in SoCal and Fresno, would want presentations made at chapter meetings talking about your program. My other comment, I was pleased to hear that you're partnering with the Department of Rehabilitation. I gotta say this as bluntly as I can. It's a goddamn shame that a former Rehabilitation Services Administration director, Dr. Fred Schroeder, insisted upon and put into play a policy several years ago that says that people who go to work for NIV facilities cannot be considered as competitive employment closures. I spent a lot of time a couple of years back at an NCSAB conference trying to convince Lene Rutledge to change that policy. She wouldn't. I have talked to Kevin extensively about doing some lobbying in Washington, D.C. That policy makes no sense. It makes no more sense to say that someone who goes to work in an NIV facility, a contact center, the rehab counselor who placed him or her can't get credit than it is to say that it allows for someone who goes to work for an independent living center where 90% of the employees have disabilities that they can get credit for placement. There's something wrong with that, and I'd like to see NIV and others get involved in changing that policy, because RSA won't. We need to push to make sure that does get changed.
Mitch, 2 comments. I'm meeting with Kevin. Kevin Lynch, by the way, is the CEO of National Industries for the Blind. I'm meeting with him and Brian Bashan on Tuesday afternoon. We're working on a teaming agreement with San Francisco Lighthouse to work with them to increase employment in the Bay Area, primarily in manufacturing, because that's our expertise. As far as our, we'll take the blame for Lene. She came from Washington State. She was the head of our VR program. But just a comment. There's some flexibility around that as far as they base it on whether it's an integrated or non-integrated setting. So in our machine shop, where 85% of the people making aircraft parts are blind, that's not considered a closure. But at the base supply center here at the Navy base, that is considered an integrated setting. So, you know, VR will support that. So it's kind of case by case, and it's inconsistent.
I haven't heard that, Kirk.
Yeah.
But as I say, if a counselor could get credit for placing somebody in an independent living center, which is 90% people with disabilities, and not get credit for placing someone at a machine shop with 75% of the employees.
I fully agree. Yeah, in our organization, and that's interesting, the Wagner O'Day Act was passed in 1938, and I don't think society really thought blind people could be in those types of jobs. So the requirement is only around direct labor. So there's no requirement to have blind people in any other jobs. In our organization, we have a goal of 40%, and we're at 25% right now. And the challenge is that in an organization of our size, you know, we're $50+ million and we have 9 locations and 400 employees. For the professional managerial technical positions, we need people with a certain level of work experience. So, for instance, a network engineer, we kept a network engineer job open for 2 years looking for a blind person who had, you know, 10 or 12 years network experience. So we have difficulties finding qualified blind applicants for some of those jobs. We have created a senior director of strategic recruiting position and hired a blind gentleman named Kevin Daniel to fill that role. So his job is to know where every hip and happening blind professional in the country is and get them in our database and know what their talents and skills and interests are, so that we can have blind people in those applicant pools. But it's a real challenge. We get people to submit resumes who have, you know, the academic credential but don't have the work experience. And then if we do find a blind person with the work experience, most people are really reluctant to move, to leave a situation that's working well for them and take the risk of making that change. So that it's one of our toughest challenges that we really need to address over time. But we've made progress. We track it. We look at it every month. And right now we have 25% of our indirect positions are held by people who are blind. That includes HR, IT, finance, communications, etc.
I was thinking more along the lines of supervisors and call centers and supervisors in your manufacturing programs. Mm-hmm.
I would say that is a generally historically true statement, that most of the managers in this program over time, the majority have been sighted people. We just took our employees of the year to National Industries for the Blind Conference. Linda Elliott is a blind woman. She's a manufacturing supervisor. She has 100 people reporting to her. Mike Shea in our machine shop is blind. He's got 100 people reporting to him. But it has historically been an issue. We're trying to address it ourselves as an agency. NIB is addressing it through the fellowship program Rick talked about, where people are paid a salary for 2 years to learn how to be leaders and managers in business. And most recently, Al Avina, who's a blinded vet, went through the program, and he's now the director of Blinded Veterans Association, Blinded Veterans of America. So NIB doesn't require you to go to work for an NIB agency after the fellowship. You can go work wherever you want. So Al took that job. We tried to hire him, but he took the BVA job. Oh, good.
I can't recall Barbara Manipop. That's her name.
Okay.
And she's a supervisor up there, and they love it.
This question is for Rick Moore. Can you talk about the blind professional program that you have there at NIB?
Travis.
Hey, Mike. You know, to be totally honest with you, my forte is more business development. So I really came here with just a quick overview of that.
I can give you the basics, Mike.
Thanks, Kirk.
Yeah, NIB, Jim Gibbons, who's a blind CEO, who's now head of Goodwill International, set up a kind of multi-level leadership development program. So the fellowship is one aspect, and again, that's they take applications from people from around the country who are interested in becoming business leaders, and they pay those folks for 2 years. They spend part of the time at NIB, and then they spend part of the time at agencies. We've hired three people. Sam Rodriguez, who came from California, is our product development specialist. He went through the program. We hired David Geary, who's an attorney from Pennsylvania, went through the program. And then Kevin Daniel, whom I mentioned earlier, is our recruiter. There is an effective supervision program, which is open to blind supervisors. All these programs are just for blind people. Effective supervision for blind supervisors at agencies. It's about a 15-month program. NIB pays for it. You travel back to Virginia for 3 one-week sessions. Over the time, you're partnered with a mentor. There's a business management training program that's in association with the Darden School of Business from University of Virginia. I went through that program, 5 one-week sessions, really, again, designed around business, marketing, finance, human resources. And then there's a program called Leaders at All Levels, which the agencies, kind of a train-the-trainer model where agencies are given the tools to roll out a leadership program for all their employees. So I think it's the best thing that NIB does. It gets real results. It gets blind people in the position to be qualified to apply for those managerial, supervisory, leadership roles, executive roles. I can't speak on behalf of NIB, but I can tell you that the director of training there is Jack Tootson, and he would certainly relish a phone call from you and talk to you about it. He's back at the office in Alexandria, and I can put you in touch with him.
Yeah.
It's great to be here.
Thank you. You know, Jacqueline. Go ahead.
How much college do you need to have for that business management school?
There's not a requirement. It's college level coursework, so you don't necessarily have to have a degree, but you have to be a person who can, you know, pursue that type of study effectively. And there's a lot of reading, there's projects to do, there's writing to be done. So you know you have to be able to read and write and do a paper and do a project and collaborate on a team. But there's no degree requirement.
No, do you need like a previous? Because you needed a degree to get into the program. That's all.
You do not.